When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This week on Underdogs, can anyone stop an inevitable Celtics-Nuggets NBA Finals? And what about the WNBA's moment in time?
The cry goes up both far and near for Underdog.
Underdog. Countdown going on right now. Morrow, up to Schultz. 5 seconds left in the game. Do you believe in miracles? Yes!
By George, the dream is alive.
Underdog.
And I guess there's only one thing left to do. Win the whole fucking thing.
It's the Underdogs back with you for another week. I'm Jordan Brenner, joined as always by my co-host Peter Keating. Peter, what's up?
How's it going? Great time of the calendar of sports year, isn't it? It's everything's going on right now.
It is. You'd think we were running on fumes after our college basketball goodness in March and the Masters, but no, we're right back into it today with. A little bit later in the show, we're going to be joined by David Sampson of Nothing Personal. He is going to talk to us about the WNBA's moment in time and how the league can capitalize financially and really turn this Caitlin Clark spectacle into a sustainable, strong financial model for the league. But first, NBA playoffs are getting going, Peter. We're recording this on Wednesday afternoon. The first play-in games were last night. More to come tonight. And Peter, what we've seen in the betting lines is that there are two clear favorites to win their respective conferences. The Celtics are minus 175 to win the East. The Nuggets are plus 135 to win the West, even though they're the two seed. So our job as the co-host of the Underdogs is to find underdogs. So first, let's start in the East. If a team other than the Celtics is going to win the conference, who will that be and why?
Jordan, there's one answer. The answer is my and your New York Knicks. Jordan, we wondered all season amidst all these injuries. Now, look, the Knicks' best player is hurt.
Second best player.
All right, well, the second best player now, because when he got hurt, another player emerged who was even better, right? So Julius Randle is out. Something people think about the Knicks, it isn't exactly true. They think they're ferocious and outstanding and great on defense and not offense. That's a function of pace, Jordan. The Knicks play at the slowest pace in the NBA. So they're actually 7th points per 100 possessions offensively, 10th in defense. They do play a tough, grinding defense, and it is interesting and kind of exciting, especially if you're a Knicks fan, to watch. But what's really important is that amidst all the injuries they dealt with, we wondered, would they find productive ways to get their best players in combinations that work on the court at the same time? And the answer has been yes. Two things. Tom Thibodeau has found combinations that work involving Brunson and not involving Brunson. The OG Anunoby, Isaiah Hartenstein, Dante DiVincenzo trio has been outstanding. And all of those combinations of those players have worked. But the key is Anunoby. Jordan, Anunoby's played 23 games since he came over in a trade. The Knicks are 20-3 in those games. He is a difference maker, especially on defense. All the combinations he's in with other players, they're +7 to +13 per 18 or 20 minutes on the court. This team is just playing at an outstanding level. They never give up, and they're undervalued. They're +1,200. Jordan, the Knicks were 3-1 against Philadelphia this year, 2-1 against Miami. What is the case for them to be a longer shot than Milwaukee? Milwaukee's been a sub-500 team for half the season.
So give you some numbers on that, the Bucks are
right,
+700.
Give me the Knicks at +1,200. I like it better than Philly at +750, Milwaukee at +700, and as you mentioned, Boston, deservedly the overwhelming favorite at -175. The Knicks at +1,200. Come on, if you take the scoring margin and adjust it by the strength of their opponents, they're the second best team in the conference. And that's
there's
what I
some
think they
value.
Are.
There's some
I think
value.
The second best team in the conference.
There's some value in a number two seed being +1,200. However, I have answers for what you're bringing up. The Knicks don't have shot creation outside of Jalen Brunson. So while I love OG Anunoby, he's not a shot creator. He's a corner three-point shooter who plays off other players' creation. He's a great defender. Teams are going to scheme for Jalen Brunson in a way they didn't in the regular season, and he is a small point guard. It is easier to take a guy like that out of a game. The question is, who becomes your secondary shot creator in the playoffs? They will miss Julius Randle in that situation. I just don't think this team has the weapons to win the East. There's certainly, look, I don't think anybody's beating the Celtics in the East, save for an injury. But yeah, I'm going to go with the team.
If I said that, you would say, we're talking about underdogs. Yes, I think the Celtics are actually undervalued and underrepresented.
I'm taking the team that has the best shot to beat them in a seven-game series, and that's the Philadelphia 76ers. Now, they may not even make it in. If they lose the play-in game tonight and then lose the subsequent game, maybe they don't get in. But their upside is higher than everyone else's, except for Milwaukee with a healthy Giannis, but that's a big if, and I'm not betting on them now, and the Celtics. So I like the team they've constructed around Joel Embiid this year. I like Tyrese Maxey. They do have multiple shot creators. They also have role players. So at plus 750. And by the way, the market is on them because this is a team that we don't even know if they're the 7 or the 8 seed or out, and they're ahead of the Knicks as a favorite, right? So the Sixers at plus 750, if I have to pick someone other than Boston, that's my pick.
If you're going to pick a long shot, sometimes you have to do it based on you think the market making a mistake. I think the market is making the error of thinking the Celtics will automatically be in after the play-ins. There's no guarantee of that. Secondly, Embiid was hurt in game 81 of the season. He looked okay, but he didn't play in the last game. De'Anthony Melton, Mr. Do Something, is also hurt. You think he's out for this game that they have to play. I'm not sure that they're healthy. And also, was Brunson better in the first 20 games of the season, when everyone was just getting used to his explosiveness?
Or was anyone getting used to? He was on the team last year. He had a great season last year.
That's what I'm saying. Is he better? Okay, so was he better in the last year and this first 20 games of the season? Or was he better in the last 20 games of this season when everybody's scrambling trying to make the playoffs? Teams haven't solved him. Teams have not schemed
him. Really?
Did you
watch the playoffs last year? The playoff basketball and regular season basketball are simply two different animals.
You mean when Randall was shooting about 18% last year?
Fine. But if you don't have a secondary shot creator, it doesn't matter. You can take one player away. You have to be able to beat a team a different way. Who is creating offense for the Knicks other than Jalen Brunson? The answer is no one. But let's move to the Western Conference, which is, I think we would agree, more wide open. Again, if I had to pick someone, would I pick the Nuggets? Yeah. But they're plus 135. And then comes in a potpourri of other options, right? You got the Clippers, plus 600. Thunder, plus 700. Mavericks, plus 750. The Suns, plus 850. The Timberwolves, who went into the last day of the season with a chance at the one seed, are plus 1,000. The Lakers, plus 1,200, now that they're locked in. And then you have the Pelicans and Kings at plus 5,000 and plus 6,000. One of them's in, one of them's out. Peter, where are you going in this group?
Now, this is a bet on the first round going well. But okay. I've liked them all season.
Are we on the same place?
And they are, let me see, first, second, third, fourth, fifth. They're the sixth longest odds in the conference. I love the Timberwolves at plus 1,000.
Oh my God, we agree.
Gobert and Towns have stayed on the floor for most of the season, 60 games. When they're on the floor together, this team allows fewer than 100 points per possession. I know Towns was out because he tore his meniscus, but for the most part, the chemistry issues, the injury issues that this team faced, that all the other teams in the conference have faced, they really settled before this season began, and then they had to keep them healthy, and Towns is out for about 3 weeks. Look, Edwards has a great season. Conley has had a great season, and I'll tell you one thing. I was concerned that Conley was playing so many important minutes and doing so well. Could he keep it up? He's 36, but guess what? Their backup point guard, Jordan McLaughlin, is having a great season. He plays a dozen minutes a game, but he's shooting almost 50% on threes. So I like this experiment. I still like it. Now, I want to raise one big red flag. They've been horrible against Phoenix. They got to get by Phoenix.
I want to get into that, yeah.
But I don't know about that first-round matchup because they got blown out the last day of the season. They kind of lost all their games to Phoenix by double digits.
Yes.
But I love the way this team is put together, and I'd like to see it succeed. They're so much fun. They're so interesting to watch. And I do I have a little sentimental attachment because the window is snapping shut on them. If they don't win now, this team's blown up, and I kind of don't want to see that.
Well, I don't know that I agree with that. I mean, they have a
They'll be out of money, is all I really mean.
No, but they have a transcendent young star in Anthony Edwards who there's no reason for him to go anywhere. But, I landed on the Timberwolves as well, mostly because there's just value at plus 1,000 for a team that, like I said, was one bad game against Phoenix away from being the one seed, okay? And this is, by the way, a team that I've come to lately because I picked their under wins and got trounced before the season. So I admit when I'm wrong. The Gobert-Towns pairing works well. And to your point, when Towns, Gobert, and Edwards play together, they're plus 9.3 points per 100 possessions better. Now, just to, again, remind everyone how good Denver is, when Jokic, Jamal Murray, and Aaron Gordon play together, they're 13.5 points per 100 possessions
Although that's better on offense
than defense. So it's a challenge. The Phoenix game's interesting. They're 0-3, but one game was, I think, early November, and then two games were within the last couple weeks, including one without Towns. Finishing up the regular season, no question that's a warning sign. The Suns arguably had more to play for to get out of the play-in game, but game mattered to the Timberwolves. They wanted that one seed. They fell to the three, and now they get the Suns again. It's a tough matchup, especially because it's a great litmus test. The Wolves play big. The Suns play small. Okay, it is going to be a challenge for the, you know, will they play Rudy Gobert off the floor again? I don't know, but you do have the ability to play Karl Anthony Towns at the five.
Yes,
and adjust to matchups. So,
and wouldn't it be nice to see him just go crazy in a series like this, just once, like fully live up to everything, just have everything work out for those guys? I think if there's anybody in your life who hasn't been caught up with the NBA, you want to get them back in. This is such a great, with the players, the style matchups, there's a great series to watch.
Look, anyone can emerge from the West, truly. And I will say this, that we are all overlooking the Thunder because they came along so quickly. They are plus 700 as the one seed. So that does matter. They've played well against Denver in particular this year. They do have a star in Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, another budding star in Jalen Williams, and Chet Holmgren is the type of versatile modern big who can cause problems. So bottom line, it's going to be super fun to watch. Tune in, but something else you should tune in to is the WNBA this season. And we will talk with David Sampson about where the league is headed right after this.
Underdog, underdog.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Underdog, underdog.
We're back with you, and we are really excited to be joined by our colleague at Meadowlark Media, the Levitard and Friends Network. It's David Sampson, the host of Nothing Personal with David Sampson. You may know him from the Marlins. You may know him from Survivor. You may know him from yelling at you on a podcast, but we're excited to have him here. Welcome, David.
So happy to be here. I can't believe that this is my first time with you guys, but I love your show and I love your producer.
I've been told you never forget your first time with Peter, so this is going to be special for you. And and we too
and,
love
and
our
also
producer.
It's always the first of many times, you know. I'm not a day tripper, you know.
And we do share producers, the great Sarah McCrory, so she has helped make this long awaited collaboration happen. So we're psyched to have you. Let's get into it. Look, the WNBA is having a moment right now, okay? Straight out of college basketball having a moment. So women's basketball, this is an inflection point. And so it's been an underdog for so long, but we just had record draft ratings on the heels of record Final Four ratings. So guys, let's get into how the WNBA can capitalize on this moment in time and increase its place in the sporting landscape and the almighty dollar, its financial heft.
Yeah, the financial part is really the most interesting thing that's not being discussed too much. And what is in common with everything you're saying is Caitlin Clark. And what the WNBA has to do is make this not a Caitlin Clark bump. It has to be a women's basketball bump. And to do that, you need to increase sponsorship revenue and gate revenue for non-Indiana Fever games. And right. So it's going to be fascinating to watch. The easy thing would be for Kathy Engelbert, the commissioner, and for the league in general, to just keep pumping out Clark content. It's low-hanging fruit. You get great numbers. Everything's positive about that. But at the end of the day, it's like a Fugazi, because you cannot increase the valuation of every team. You can't get a better overall broadcast deal. You have to have another pillar. Like I talked about, nothing personal, Magic and Bird. There's always got to be somebody else. Now, the argument I get is, hey, we already have it. We've got Angel Reese, and that's the reason. I'm sorry. It's been really Caitlin Clark centered, no matter what people are telling you. So their main job, number one, is to make sure that they can spread out this good cheer and turn it into good dollars.
And guys, tell me if you agree with this, but what's fantastic about this particular draft is I think the talent, and not just the talent, but the personalities and the diversity of on-court skills, they're all there to do that if the moment, if they land on this moment correctly. You're right. It's not just Angel Reese, but the combination of Reese and Cardoso is, it's like that team is fascinating. That team has twin towers. I mean, you know, Cameron Brink, a lot of these players are going to places that are kind of set up to build franchises around the new talent that's coming to the league in this moment. You think that's right? I don't think it's just Clark.
Well, and let's not forget too, there is massive existing talent already in the league.
Yeah.
It's just the casuals who are going to follow Caitlin Clark into this league maybe haven't discovered that group of players yet. So the hope is that Caitlin Clark is the gateway drug to falling in love with a bunch of veterans, right, David?
That's fascinating, because I mean, you have super teams ready to be discovered, right? The Aces, the Liberty. I mean, that's amazing. Yeah, that's a good point.
But David, you think like that, and that's where I've seen a lot of parallels.
About that. Let's talk about the gateway drug, because it's fascinating. The whole purpose of a gateway drug and why people are scared of it, it's not the initial drug that's the gateway drug. It's the stuff that comes after that really screws you up. And so if you put that into financial terms, if Caitlin Clark is the gateway drug, then what you need is you need something as strong as heroin to hook people. And you saw it work with F1 and Drive to Survive. You've seen it work on occasion, but we're living through a moment where it's not working, where Tiger Woods was the gateway drug and then the drug, and then Masters has a problem. The ratings are down. Interest is down. They're fighting in golf. So finding will Angel Reese or Cardoso, will people be interested in that on its own? That's the question of the day.
I mean, I think you're going to have some pissed off veterans who are great players who are like, why? You know, you've already seen it, right? Why are these newer
mostly
players
from
getting
retired players?
No, but it leads to great tension and drama and storylines. And I'm here for it. And here's where I've seen a lot of references that, as you alluded to, that the WNBA, again, short lifespan still, is roughly where the NBA was in the 70s or 80s, right? Or this may be its Magic Bird moment. Here are two advantages, first of all, that I think that puts the WNBA in some ways in better shape than they were then. One, the college game right now is geared toward the women. The men have annual free agency, as we've been discussing, and it's falling apart. The women have the bigger stars, and I'm not so sure that next year Paige Bueckers and Juju Watkins won't have a Caitlin Clark-like impact again on the women's game. So
that's the statement. If Caitlin Clark becomes an annual moment where there's next up, next up, next up, then this whole show changes, because that means the WNBA becomes the NBA. We've not seen that before. We haven't even had a Caitlin Clark. People can talk about all the talent that was in there from Rebecca Lobo. Go back to college when Connecticut won every year. It was a blip. It didn't matter. And I don't mean to be so harsh about it, but it didn't. Now it really matters. And so if there's the next Caitlin Clark, game over.
The template is there. People are exposed to Paige Bueckers deep in the tournament. People are exposed to Juju Watkins. Bueckers will be there at least another year. Juju could be there, two, three more years? that's cool. The second thing is that the NBA didn't have in the 1980s and is gambling and fantasy. Okay. It is a whole other level.
Actually, it was just illegal.
Well, it is a whole other level. By the way, what are people, what season of the year are people most lacking on things to bet on? It's the summer. Unless you're like me and you're betting on no run, yes run, first inning, which is still the greatest bet in sports, by the way.
The worst.
But otherwise, this opens up a whole new window for people to bet. Again, potential exponential increase in popularity, right? If suddenly this is not just a hot hot property for people to follow, to go to games, to enjoy, but also to satisfy their gambling itch, right?
There's no question that gambling runs sports now, and we're part of DraftKings Network, and we understand the behemoth that we're dealing with, and that's what all sports want. We pretend to shy away from it, but no, we're embracing it as leagues. WNBA would love people to bet on them, just like baseball would love to have more gambling money inside it the way the NFL does and the way the NBA does. But I still think you need characters first. I think people will do gambling and fantasy, but they also, they like to have what I call anchor tenants. An anchor tenant is in the gambling world is, hey, I'm watching the game. I'm going to put action on it. That's the forward way. The backwards way is, I got nothing to do. I'm going to make a bet and then I'll watch it. What we're aiming for as leagues is people wanting to watch it and then bet on it. We'll see what happens.
David, let me ask you about the financial side of this. I see a lot of people online saying, how can the players want more money, or how, yeah, here's why salaries are so low, because the leagues never turned a profit. Can you talk a little bit about whether and how much profits matter? I mean, there's a lot of companies that have never turned a profit or that have become great tech companies. Are you buying the WNBA as a growth stock where annual profits don't matter so much as getting the investment necessary to keep growing revenues, keep all those legs growing?
It's funny.
Do profits matter in this scenario?
Yeah. So when you're talking about a startup, you generally know that you've got a runway to profitability. And that runway can be anywhere from, you know, 6 months to 10 years. It depends on the company, and it depends on how well capitalized the company is and how easily you can control labor costs. The WNBA controls labor costs really well, as we're seeing with what Caitlin Clark's rookie deal is. They also have an opportunity to exploit broadcast revenue in a way they have not done before, having really come under the umbrella of the NBA up to this moment. And maybe even in the next deal, we'll wait to see. But what you really need to see out of the WNBA is standalone national deals. The national deals, sponsorship deals, broadcast deals. Then you marry that with the local gate revenue. People going to games, average ticket price. We know people are buying season tickets in Indiana. What's the price? Are they going to renew? If Caitlin Clark gets hurt, if the team is bad, what's the impact? Don't tell me about the Las Vegas Aces playing in T-Mobile Arena when the Indiana Fever come to town. Tell me about them moving to T-Mobile Arena permanently, where they have more capacity and where they're getting more revenue. That, so David, to me, is the key.
So, David, before we wrap, let me ask you your best guess then. The players can reopen this CBA at the end of next season, 2025. They're going to want a bigger share of revenues. They're going to want more of an opportunity to get at shared revenues. Do you think that the league will get the kind of deals and sponsorship and the increase in revenues necessary for the players to get a bigger share of revenues and for that to even be possible?
That's the $64,000 question. Can they take advantage of the moment? Are they going to be able to monetize this Caitlin Clark phenomena? And the problem is, when your business is starting and you're taking advantage of the revenue growth, that's not the time to increase your labor cost. I feel as though there's one more CBA left to go before you'll see a huge increase in what the players get paid. I think the next CBA will be more about comfort, more about charter planes, more about hotels, how they live. That's sort of incremental that you can give to labor. But a true financial change in how you calculate the revenue sharing, in how you calculate the cap, in what percentage the players get, I think we're a bit away from that, because the WNBA has to be smart and they have to find out for themselves whether this is a moment or whether this is a lifetime.
Are the players going to play ball on that, though, or are we headed to, I mean,
what choice do they have?
Well, they did last
time. Labor impasse.
They did last time because they wanted this to be about equity, meaning an equity stake, not perfect equality in salaries. And I think there is the potential for a win-win. I hate ending anything on a note of it's important to control labor costs. But
I'm sorry to say that, but you're asking about what's in the life of the company. The WNBA as a league is at a very important moment. And I was just trying to point out to your listeners that when you're in a moment from a management standpoint, you have to increase your revenue without a concomitant huge increase in your expenses. And I think that's what the WNBA is going to be looking out for.
It's fascinating because it's a win-win so far, and it's a potential win-win into the future. It's going to take a lot of management.
Well, and that's what I'm wondering. Do you think there is enough alignment from the players and from management to sort of do this hand in hand? Or is that just too utopian an idea and are we headed for strife quickly?
It's a good sign if there's strife. That means the league's doing well. I like that. I don't shy away from labor strife. I don't think you should. No one locks out or strikes a company that's failing and not going anywhere where there's no passion for it. People lock out and strike when there's more to fight over. And that would be a good sign for the WNBA, not a bad sign.
Well, look, no one knows strife like I do working with Peter every week. So I'm glad you experienced that with us. I feel bonded to you now.
And thank you.
We will have to have you back sooner rather than later. There's a lot going on in the world that you touch on, whether it's relocation of franchises or you mentioned baseball and its finances. So let's do this again soon. Survivor. I will talk for days. So let's do this again soon. In the meantime, Jordan, that's Peter, and we'll be back with you guys next week. The Underdogs Podcast is a production of Meadowlark Media and the DraftKings Network. Our show is produced by Sarah McCrory. Our executive producer is Neely Lohman. Follow us on Twitter at PeterKeatingNJ and at Jordan Brenner. Tell a friend and subscribe to the Underdogs Podcast anywhere you like to listen, and be sure to tune in again next week.